Hello, hello, hello to the legions, and welcome, welcome once again to the What You Been Watching podcast. I am your host, the merry, marvelous Mike Dudley, joined as always on this brand new year by my brother, co-host, and cohort.
MD3 Marcus Dudley checking in on the YOU, what is going on out there in podcast land. We are broadcasting live from the Lake Jackson studios of What Y'all Been Watching. Hope y'all are all doing well. Hope you all enjoyed your holiday festivities into the new year.
Yes,
blessings and all that whatnot bestowed upon you from me and mine to you and yours. Happy holidays and all that whatnot. So how you doing though, my brother?
I am good. Just trying to recover financially from Christmas. Once again, it has crippled me. I don't know why we do this to ourselves every year and put ourselves through stress. We could all just collectively say no more.
Yeah, that would be pretty financially beneficial. I am not only recovering from financial stuff, but I had the flu really bad and it kicked the shit out of me. So if you hear me quietly giving one of these, pardon me. I'm talking less, I might be doing y'all a favor. That's why. So.
Yeah, man. So how about you? Did you get everything you wanted for Christmas?
And then some, my friend.
All right.
You know, when we started the Christmas season, the Philadelphia Eagles were doing very well. And by the time this comes out, I hope that they're ready to make some plays in the playoffs. So we'll see.
I believe in them.
I do too, actually, surprisingly. And it's weird, man. We were talking earlier about negativity, which we'll talk about the Superman trailer and some of the negativity I saw.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I mean, it's the internet. What can you expect? But I'm in an Eagles group online, and I swear you would think, and I know part of it's just being an Eagles fan, you would, like, the most critical effing people I've ever met sometimes. Like 12-2, and they're like, this team's trash, and we're not doing nothing. It's like, dude, we could be the 2-12 Raiders right now. Like, what are you talking about? Like, enjoy some of it, you know?
This
doesn't happen all the time. We actually have a number one defense. It's like, I never have it. Like, enjoy it. So hopefully that by the time this comes out, I'm not looking real stupid and foolish. Well, like I did with the Seminoles.
Coming from one hater to...
you address it finally. I tried to put you in the quietly critical corner and disguise it as something else. That's why I'm going to get this damn hater ass Huey Bell.
Sometimes you can't let yourself get too happy because inevitably when it's taken away from you, it's going to hurt that much more. So you got to kind of, like, you know, you got to keep your head in check. So if you say everything's perfect, then you have nothing can get better. It gives you nowhere to go. So you got to cut it back a little bit. You know, it's not perfect, but you know, like.
It's emotionally hedging your bets is what it is.
Sure. Like, it's a safety mechanism.
Yeah. It's like when, if you are hypothetically, it's no different than if I were to honestly believe because I have a healthy skepticism. If, like, the Eagles are playing a good team, I'll be like, well, I honestly think that team could beat them, you know, or whatever. But then I bet on the Eagles. Or if I bet on that other team and the Eagles win, it's like, oh, I didn't mind losing that bet because I emotionally hedged my bet already. If the Eagles win, it's like, oh, well, I lost $20 because I bet on the other team, but oh, well.
At least my boys came through.
Yeah, so that's what you do with skepticism. That's what I do with skepticism. Like,
but then also sometimes things are just garbage.
Yeah.
Straight up basura.
It's basura. But anyways, shout out to Ketsa.
Yes.
Always,
yes,
bright.
Back onto it.
Shout out to Mr. A1, bringing all the flavors. I don't even know, man. I got heat for days this man sends me. I can't put it on the air because, you know, it's a common thing, but it's just me being courteous. But trust me, he's got the flavors that you need. If you need any kind of custom beats, music, sound effects, whatever the hell you got going on for you and whatever platform you need, reach out. a1reality.music@gmail.com. My guy is a consummate professional. We'll get back to you lickety-split. You know, tell them the sound you're going for. Give them a couple things to pull some references from. And I sit back and watch the magic happen in that inbox. So shout out to him. Shout out to MK Dudley Art on the Instagram.
That's right, yes.
Follow that beautiful banner all the way to our Middle Duddies flavors that he's got in the art world, you know. So what else we got? Is that all the plugs?
You can always, of course, reach us at facebook.com/DudleyBrosPodcast, or you can reach at gmail.com/whatyoubeenwatchingpodcast. Also on Instagram.
You did that backwards, but yeah, it's whatyoubeenwatchingpodcast@gmail.com. But yes. We're good, though. No, we're good. And then Instagram @whatyoubeenwatching, right?
Yes.
Yeah. We got there.
Yeah.
We got there. A little rusty.
Also, you know, we out there in the streets. I was running a tire inflation business. It's mostly me just breathing heavy, but
I was turning Mike's hard lemonade to Mike's soft lemonade. Selling that shit at a discount.
Some middle schoolers.
Yeah, for real. This is just Zima's rebottled with a splash of
remember Zima's
liquid IV in there. Anyways. So, yeah, man, the reason everybody tunes in every single week, my guy, post-holidays to get them past whatever they got going on, the people need to know, my brother, what you been watching, dude.
Strangely enough, I think it's something you have also seen recently.
Ew.
Brand new Superman trailer from James Gunn.
Yeah, man. What you think, dude?
I really like it. I'm not going to lie. It looks like a lot of fun. You know what it reminded me of? Remember when Christopher Reeve was Superman and Superman was, he was witty and charming and he was, you know, but also very down to earth and very, you know, I hate to say man of the people, but trying his best to fit in with the common folk.
Yeah.
You know, it seems a lot like that. And I think that that's something that's been missing from the character of lately. Like, I don't want a dark, dreary, like, the world is on my shoulders and I'm one step away from being a tyrant super. Like, I want Superman, like, I will absolutely help get your cat out of the tree and also punch an asteroid in space.
I'm with you there. And look, I'm not trying to take shots. If people like the Snyderverse, that's cool. The only thing I don't like is when people just immediately start to shit on this movie just off a trailer. Which we'll talk about the negativity. Mm-hmm, those were just, golly, I went to watch the trailer online. And I'm not surprised it's the internet, but it's like, dude, somebody just posted something simply as like, I like this movie, or I like this trailer, has me hyped for the movie. And like 40 people are like laughing emojis bro, this trash, this movie straight. Like,
you should die. You should butter
that. It's like, hey, I'm just like, voice. I didn't say anything negative to anybody else.
Right.
Or there's just a bunch of like, this is what you get when you fire Zack Snyder. Like, here's the thing. Those movies still exist.
Right.
And granted, we didn't get to see Darkseid try to storm, or we didn't get that far in it. But
sorry.
Those movies still exist. You can still go watch them. If that's like, oh, that's my favorite Superman. I like Cavill as Superman. I just don't like the script he was given to work with as Superman.
Right.
Like, he just kind of neutered him. He just was mopey in the first one and then was like, I didn't understand what his motivation was in the second one. And then Justice League, he just showed up as a zombie and was like, well, I'm here to save the day now, which was the closest iteration of like, oh, this is the hope we've all been waiting for, but not until we got through Pet Cemetery Superman first. Like, that's what it was. Let's be real.
I can't go down that road.
Not go down that road. A lot of Kryptons down that road.
Something's better off dead.
Right. That guy rules. Well played. So
you know how you want to be the ADR guy?
I do.
I want to be that guy in every horror movie. The harbinger of doom who's like, well, I wouldn't camp out at that cabin. Some say that some Native American kids were buried upside down. They had their eyes poked out with sticks. Urinated all over the corpses they did. Like, some say that cabin's haunted. Like, I want to be that guy.
Look, corner that market. If you got connections out there, hook your boys up. I'm trying to do critter noises. Michael's trying to be spooky old guy that the teenagers at Camp Wee Wahitchka don't listen to or whatever.
Wee Wahitchka.
I don't know. I picked one. I think that's probably is a real camping. But anyways. But no, back to Superman trailer. I dug it, man. I like Crypto being in it. I hope it does.
Yes.
I hope it, and again, I don't feel this way based on the trailer. I hope it's not Guardians of the Galaxy. And again, not because there's anything wrong with those movies, but those movies already exist. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need Superman Guardians of the Galaxy. Those movies exist. If I want the Guardians of the Galaxy vibe, I'll go watch those films.
No, I definitely don't want Clark Kent making dick and fart jokes, for sure.
Yeah.
But I think that I trust James Gunn enough on his directorial talents to sort of know where that level is in terms of you can have a witty Superman without making him crass.
Yeah.
You know?
Good word.
I think that ultimately part of the persona and caricature of Superman is that he is a man of refined dignity. Like, he's not going to make base jokes. He's not going to... He might have a witty one-liner or a wisecrack, but it's never going to be at the expense of anybody. It's never going to be, you know, insulting.
Yeah, I think that's very well said, actually. I just I can appreciate the fact that they're going for clearly a very Silver Age comics.
Yes.
Which is like late 50s into the 60s sure. era, where it's like sometimes that means Superman was just fighting Monster of the Week. Sometimes later you got to introduce certain other cameos from other, like Hawkman would show up and sure. some of the Green Lanterns would show up. But
that I do like that they already put on Front Street that we're going to get a Guy Gardner. We're going to get a Mr. Terrific.
And Mr. Terrific looked dope, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's like, a really underrated DC character.
He is, yeah. Yeah, he's like the Mr. Fantastic of you know, DC.
Basically, kind yeah.
of, minus the stretchy powers.
I mean, I guess he's, the I guess other he's three more members. Tony Stark in terms of like just brilliant inventor.
Yeah, yeah.
He just doesn't have the suit of armor.
Yeah, but he's got, yeah. No, he's dope, though. He's a good character. I'm glad to see him come to the big screen. And
yeah.
I know a lot of people's concerns online already, which, again, I pay as much attention to it, which, let's be honest, even if I was like, man, that looks like crap, I'm going to go see this movie.
Oh, for sure.
I'm the target audience for such things. But I know a lot of people are afraid that they're going to try to do what they did even more so and try to shotgun a universe and go like, here's all these characters. But James Gunn has said openly, like, we're jumping into a world where Superman has been around and known for a few years now.
This isn't year one.
Yes, isn't year one. Like, there's a superhero world. We're just kind of early in it, but we're not, you know. So hopefully,
which is fine. That's totally acceptable way to do that. You know what I mean? Like, and again, I think that was the main problem with the previous Snyder universe, was it was trying to make it a year one and also introduce all of these characters in a shotgun form, in terms of just like, we'll just put them all on screen at the same time and that'll fix it. Now they're all together. It's like, well, no, like the Avengers took time to like build individual characters, individual movies. Then it took the time to sort of show the audience, now here's how they're all connected.
Yeah, they killed Superman in the second movie he was in. It's like, I barely know this guy.
Right.
Like, I have zero connection to him. And even in the first half of this movie, he was against Batman, and all of a sudden Doomsday kills him. I'm like, what is this? Anyways, but here nor there. We're not here to trash. We're here to talk about the trailer. So I dug it.
Talking about hater ass.
Yeah, that's me. That's me. Snyderverse has it's there's things I like about it, but just Superman, he missed the mark there in terms of this shit is just joyless.
This
guy is like, I must be shunned from, which have an aspect of that in the Superman character of like, it's got to be a burden to be like, I can't save everybody, and like, I do feel outcast and this and that. There's there's an aspect of it, but what makes him better than all of us, more human than all of us, is the ability to overcome and still go to work with a smile on your face and be like, hey man, I'm what you guys need.
Right,
if you're not that, lean on me kind of guy.
Right.
And it's, and that's like the strength of it all.
Yeah,
so it's like,
that's
instead of just moping around for 8 years, I'm like, I'm going to go put stumps through a truck driver's truck and ruin his his livelihood because he poured a beer on me.
Well, Eddie Vedder plays in the background.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So anyways, so Crypto, we're for it.
Yes.
Down for Crypto, Guy Gardner and all the other
ones. Nicholas Holt as Lex Luthor, please.
I like him.
Yep.
I call him Brandon Holt all the time. Probably like 9 times on this podcast.
It's a problem.
It is. We respect you here. It's a sign of appreciation here at What You Been Watching.
That's
you get your name butchered.
That's right. That's right.
Chiwetel Ejiofor, we like you a lot too.
That's right. That's going on the bingo card.
Yeah, for sure. Anyways, so Superman trailer, we're stoked, right?
All for it, man. I can't wait to see it. And again, it's James Gunn, so you know it's going to be fun. You know it's going to have a sense of humor to it. I think that given his track record, he knows exactly where the line is in order to not turn it into just like, you know, like I said, like a college humor skit or something like that, you know.
I'm for it, though. So anyways, exciting stuff happening. July 11th. We'll be there. What else you been watching, my dude?
Ooh, okay. So I also just recently watched the David Leitch.
I like that guy.
A24. Atomic Blonde.
Not A24, it's, what is it,
24 Studios?
No. Northwest, 24 North or something like that?
Anywho's.
Well, the production studio he has that makes like Nobody and just did The Fall Guy with Ryan Gosling and Atomic Blonde and Deadpool 2, some other stuff.
Right.
Anyways.
We ain't resume stock.
Yeah, dude, look. Anyways.
Atomic Blonde with Charlize Theron and James McAvoy. I forget who the other spy was in it, but she was gorgeous. The French spy.
Yeah, I know you're talking about. I can't.
Anyway, shout out to you because thanks for all of that. So for just brief plot synopsis, Atomic Blonde takes place in the last days of the Berlin Wall, like right before East and West Germany became united. And there's a list of spies and double agents that have been operating that somehow gets lost. And they send in Charlize Theron to find it because she's their top operative, but she's working for the British, even though she's, or she's working for the Americans, even though she's British. I don't remember.
Yeah. I remember it, the plot got overly confusing for what it needed to be, in my opinion. Yeah. It was based off a comic book, I believe, right?
That sounds right.
I think
that
it is. Right.
Yeah. But I will say the action sequences in it are amazing and they play really, really well. It's very slick, very stylized violence. I mean, maybe not so much John Wick, but it's
pretty close. Minus the gunplay, but like in terms of the hand to hand combat, it's very,
yes, it's very fast paced, very
long camera takes. Yes, you get to see the impact and the tiredness or the fatigue set in on the players.
Yeah. So the action sequences, and there's a really good car chase sequence in it where they're flipping cars and getting hit with Molotov cocktails and all sorts of cool stuff. Action sequences are great, but in a spy thriller, you really, really, like, it's crucial that the audience understand what's at stake and where everybody stands. Like, it's okay to have a turn of like, oh, this person isn't who I thought they were, because obviously spies. But like, when you're dealing with double agents and triple agents and this person is telling three different stories, like, it becomes very, very difficult to follow exactly what everybody's motivation is.
I agree from what I remember of that movie. I remember seeing it in theaters, and then I watched it once when it came on streaming at one point. But I do remember it was also hard to follow because they were all very open. I mean, everyone, like, there was a piece of paper that was floating around that, hey, this person is a double agent, this person's a triple agent. And James McAvoy's character was very open about, like, yeah, I'm playing both sides. Like, and so you don't trust him, but yet you have to at points. So it was just kind of weird of, like, why don't you just fuck this dude up right now,
right?
You know,
right.
Beat the hell out of this dude and be like, where's the piece of paper? I know you got it. You know, but he was smart or whatever. I remember that it complicated things in the fact of everybody knowing that they were all double agents as well. It wasn't a mystery.
Right. For being a clandestine organization, everybody was very open about their secrets.
Yeah, they're like, well, I'm like 60% on your side though, but I gotta be 40% their side. So, and it's just like, okay. It's just, and then you go tell the opposite numbers to the opposite side. It's
right,
like, whatever.
Right. Yeah, James McAvoy, at first they tried to play him like he was which side was the communist side? East Berlin was the communist
side? Asking the wrong guy.
Anyway, he was on the communist side, but he was playing a double agent trying to infiltrate into the other side in order to steal secrets, whatever. He's traveling back and forth, so he's got all these underground connections and whatever. And he basically, they try to play him as somebody who is playing both sides because he's not sure which way the wall is going to fall. And so he's trying to hedge his bets 50-50. And then at some point, he just starts acting irrationally, just holding on to things he shouldn't. Like, he gets a piece of information and it literally could end all of his problems, but he decides to hold on to it because he, I guess, can't trust Charlize Theron, but he's also, like, that's his point of contact, and, like, if he gives her this piece of information, they win.
I do remember that being, like, his weird bid for power that he held, like, yeah, of his, like, yeah, I need this vital information. I guess it gave him some security in some way, the same time, it was like, you could... I remember it being a weird thing, and so, like, I think he got, like, kind of power drunk on it, though, from what I recall, but he was also... What he was doing, to the best of my knowledge, was he was capitalizing on the chaos. Like, he knew that it was inevitable, and he wanted to position himself for whichever way it did fall to be like, hey, I was here the whole time. But at the same time, he was somehow benefiting from the chaos, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
He was kind of just like, he was doing pretty well for himself with the volatility or whatever. So
For sure. But even that... He was smart enough to understand that all of that was going to come to an end. And so, like, at some point, which side of the fence do you want to sit on? And especially when you... So at some point, he gets the dossier or whatever that has the list of all the double and triple agents. And then he just decides to be the bad guy. Like, haha, it was my plan all along. Like, no, it wasn't. You literally just said that you're just reacting to shit and you're playing everybody against everybody. So like now that it's in your hands, like now you're going to be Mr. Villain all of a sudden.
The Why? Joker conundrum where he's like, do I look like a guy with a plan? And then he's got a master plan. Like, it seems like it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Even then, I feel like we've suffered the same fate of this movie in the terms of like, we're not talking about the parts that are badass. We're getting lost in the plot.
Yeah.
It's a spy thriller. There's twists, there's turns. What I wanted to talk about was in the sequence that I refer back to is there's a staircase sequence in which Charlize Theron has to go up and down a set of stairs. Mm-hmm. And at some point she gets an extension cord and she kicks the shit out of some people. And it is so enjoyable to watch. Cause again, the fatigue kicks in, knives come in. But I remember once she gets that extension cord, or I think it was right.
Yeah. She basically goes into a portion of the building that I think it's under construction or something.
I think it's demolished from war or something like that.
Yeah.
Or being rebuilt, whatever. But yeah.
And she's got guys on her tail and she has like 10 seconds to find something to defend herself with. And she just rips this extension cord out of the wall and wraps it around herself. Yeah. Like, all right, here we go. And at first, you're like, what are you going to do with that? But then she has this look of determination. You're like, I don't know what she's going to do with that, but it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that there are a lot of really good parts. Everybody in this movie looks beautiful. It's very well shot. It doesn't do the thing in the action sequences where it's so choppy that you can't recognize what's happening action-wise. Like, there's very long cuts of people doing very dastardly things to each other. I will say it almost seems like, for better or worse, and it's I'm not saying it's good or bad, it's just something I noticed, that like every shot or every scene has a specific color. Like everything in the shot is saturated green or blues or reds or blacks and silvers, or like every single composition of this movie has, every single shot has a composition of a very specific color scheme. Does that make sense?
No, like, it does. I don't remember that being.
Yeah, it's.
I remember like there was certain parts, like I know there's a lot of nightclub shots that I remember, a lot of red bleeding through.
Right, but they
like,
were
like really saturated.
All the nightclubs are very red and orange, and all of the street at nights are very saturated in blues and purples, and then like when she's in her safe house, like just every light is green. She's wearing a green thing, you know, like everything is just green, 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 green.
I didn't notice that upon my first viewing, but I'm sure at some point I'll watch again. I'll look for that.
Yeah. It's just interesting. The idea of colors conveying emotions kind of thing. So it's a little heavy-handed. Like I said, it's not good or bad. It's just something I noticed. Like, oh, wow, this is a very red scene or this is a very purple scene.
It's, I'm not going to take any shots at him as a storyteller by any means. But, like, the one thing that, like, when I look at whatever his production company is, but, like, David Leitch or whatever, mm-hmm. or Chad Stahelski, who does the John Wick movies, which they both kind of somewhat co-created and kind of branched in their own directions, but still very much so carrying that style, Chad Stahelski and David Leitch. I know, like with David Leitch, like I'm going to get really cool stunt pieces mm-hmm. and really tight action sequences.
Yes.
And like if you can just not bore the shit out of me in between that, or just give me enough to get from one to the other, that makes enough up the stakes a little bit. Okay, now we got to fight harder because for these reasons. And they're like, oh, whatever. Cool. That's really all I
need. Because MacGuffin.
Yeah, right. And then if you can get me from one to the next, I'm cool with it. I'll continue to watch those dudes' movies.
Yeah.
Just being honest. Like plot, it's like, whatever. It's a spy thriller that gets a little too ahead of itself. But,
yeah, I was just going to say, it gets ahead of itself. I think that it's trying to be slicker than it is.
Yeah.
And it's not that it falls woefully short. It's just, I don't know,
it detracts from the movie. It sounds
it does.
Like.
Yeah, it's.
I know
it's
she kicks them off.
It's trying to be something that if it had just settled for a lower level or not a lower level, but like a different gear, it would have hit the mark and been perfect.
Yeah, ChatGPT it. Take this comic book, take the high points, ChatGPT it, and then let's follow those plot threads. I don't need all. It just whines too much. But
yes,
I know she kicks them off, fucker in the chest with high heels, and I like that part. But I'll just see. How would you explain that footprint? Your whole shit caved in. That's what I'm talking about.
She kills a dude with a shoe.
I know.
She takes off her shoe and stabs him in the neck with it.
I know she does. It's brutal. Brutal. It's a very Chronicles of Riddick scene where she's just like, what else can I find?
That's right.
So do you want to rate it, review it?
Or
you want to talk about it more? I got nothing else except definitely go see it for the action sequences at the bare minimum. A lot of very pretty people in the movie.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It's like I said, it's definitely more style over substance for me. So I'm going to give it, a full color palette of all neon colors.
It's a fair review. You know, I'm going to give it 2 very sore calves after about 14 flights of stairs. You're glad you did it, but you're like, ugh.
In high heels, nonetheless.
In high heels, yeah. It hurts a little bit in some areas, but you're proud of yourself, too.
So that's right.
Fair review. Fair review. What else have you been watching, my guy?
After that, I went on a Fast and Furious tangent, brother.
Oh, Lord. Because you left when we last talked Fast and Furious, you had seen Tokyo Drift.
I'd seen 1, 2, and 3, yes.
Yes. And where are we at now?
I have seen up to 6. Have not seen 7 yet. It's next on the list.
7 is the last one with Paul Walker.
Yeah. I figured
I saw that in theaters.
I wanted to save that one for a particular, you know, like almost like a shift, you know, like BC, AD, you know, before Paul Walker, after Paul Walker kind of thing. So this is like, so 7 would be his like Jesus period where like it's technically like 1 AD, you know?
I get it. Yeah, no, it's... You're getting up there, though. What are your thoughts on this?
Marcus.
Because, no, start with 4. Let's walk through it, because you left us off at Tokyo Drift, okay. Which is certainly the black sheep of the franchise.
It is the most different, for sure. Yeah. For
and
sure.
4 is like a soft reboot.
4 is almost like a soft reboot of 2, in terms of Paul Walker, again, has to go on deep undercover in order to stop a drug dealer who's using souped-up cars to bring... drugs over the border, whatever, like
same shit.
Yeah, only this time now he's paired up with Dominic Toretto in order to let Dominic get diplomatic immunity or whatever, amnesty,
diplomatic immunity. So what, Die Hard 2 or something?
Yeah. Diplomatic immunity. Yeah,
sorry.
So anyway, so they have to infiltrate the drug lords' cartel by posing as drivers as driver drug mules. Whatever, it's bullshit. It's forgettable. It's a reboot of 2. It doesn't matter. We need to talk about 5.
5. Yo, I told you 5 was when it became something different. Did I not? 5 is actually dope, bro. And I know you can look at 5 through the lens of as it began to increase the bell curve or whatever, uh-huh. Like that, of like 6, 7, and 8, and 9, and uh-huh. Like how ridiculous. But 5 was the first one where we're like, hey, I kind of like the direction we're going.
Marcus.
But it's dope though, man. I fuck with 5.
They do away with any logical, like, you think you know physics. No, mm-hmm. There are no physics in this. The physics only matter to affect the cars. That's all that matters, is the cars have their own physics.
Yeah.
It's a world. The opening shot, they free Dom by flipping over a prison bus filled with prisoners, shackled to their seats. No seatbelts, no safety equipment, no... They just flip a bus.
Yeah, the county does not invest in such safety devices.
But then... They specifically have to have in the news report, miraculously, no one was injured in this dramatic crash. And I'm like, bullshit. Bullshit. They killed so many... I almost said innocent prisoners, but you know what I mean. Like,
yeah.
So many people died, and there was no guarantee that Dom was going to be the one that lived. Like... Why? How? No fucking way. And I don't mean flipped it like once or twice. This thing went ass over tea kettle over and over and over in slow motion, caught fire, parts were flying off, and I'm just like, everybody in that bus is dead. Everybody in that bus is jello right now.
And then
nope.
Pepe O'Hare came out and said, do a barrel roll. Star Fox.
For all you Star Fox fans.
Star Fox, man.
No.
This is Rob 64. A bomb has been planted at the base. Anyways, enough of that tangent. But no, I'm sure. Yeah, they like flipping cars in slow-mo.
Oh, dude, it was... And then it only gets more wild from there. I mean, like...
And just this movie, it gets more wild.
Yeah. So basically, they free Dom, and then they decide... I forget how, but somehow they decide that they're going to rip off this drug lord, embezzler, politician in Rio de Janeiro who has collected like $90 million or something like that. Yeah. But he has them in separate banks all across Rio de Janeiro. I don't even know, dude. The plot doesn't matter. It's all fast cars and just wild shit happening. Just them training to rob this place and whipping around cars around, like they're driving in this abandoned warehouse and they're just whipping these $100,000 cars around these corners, missing columns by millimeters. And it's amazing. It's so good to watch. And then they bring in Gal Gadot, Wonder Woman's. And just put her in bikini and seducing people. And I'm like, yes, more of this, please. Thank you.
Yeah. That's what she does in
you
movies.
You literally have one of the most beautiful people in the world driving a fast car at fast speeds. I got kind of hard. I'm not going to lie.
It's a TMI section of WBW. Brought to you by... Sorry, I don't have a sponsor. I don't know where I was going with that. But...
Astroglide.
Right, there you go. There you go.
Brought to you by Crisco.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. They bring everybody back. So, like, they bring in...
Well, the amount of people they bring back, and when they say everybody in these movies, always changes. They'll be like, everyone's coming back, and then they, like, leave one person out just to bring them back in the next movie.
Well, of course, yeah.
But anyways, but no, five, though. Keep going. Gal Gadot's in it.
They bring in Ludacris. They bring in Tay Diggs. What's his name?
Tyrese
Gibson. With his big ass forehead. They introduced The Rock.
Yeah, I forgot. Is Statham in this one yet or no?
No. We'll get to that one. We'll get to that one. Yeah. Put a pin in that. Because mind blown. I can't wait for that one. Oh, that's going to be great. They bring in The Rock. They bring in Gina Carano.
Oh, she is in that movie, isn't she?
Yeah. Michelle Rodriguez comes back.
I thought she was... Doesn't she die in five?
She dies in four.
Yeah, how does she?
And then they, because she wasn't really dead.
That's right. Yeah, they comic book.
And then she had amnesia.
That's right.
And then they brought her back. No, wait, no, that was six.
I thought she died in five, right? Or did she die in four? It doesn't matter. Either way, she dies in one.
I thought she died in four.
She might have.
Anyway,
either way.
Yeah, she dies in four, and then he finds new girl in Brazil in five, mm-hmm. and they have a torrid romance, and then as soon as she comes back in six, he like dumps her like, I'm sorry, but I'm going with Letty, and she's like, that's fine.
It's like, I get it. Go with your amnesiac girlfriend. Your first love. Break my heart in the process, but hey, what a good guy you are, Dominic Toretto. But no, I've said it a million times, but five is where it ramps up. In terms of it becomes a different franchise, and again, I will stand by like the bank heist sequence with the cables attached to the safes was actually pretty cool,
Marcus.
It's pretty dope.
They used two superchargers with tow cables, like straight out of Hoth.
Yeah, I was about to say,
like, and they attach it to a what do they say, like a 4-ton safe or something like that.
Yeah,
and they're just whipping it. They're whipping this safe via tow cables around the streets of Rio, like through bank buildings, just flipping over cars. They're using... Okay. So they use their cars. How do I explain this? The cars are extensions of their superpowers. Like anything they want the car to do, it just does. Like physics and geometry and...
That's a good way to put it, actually.
Calculus be damned. Like it doesn't matter. Like nothing... Nothing matters except what these guys want to do with these cars. Like, do we need it to turn 90 degrees at going 90 miles an hour without losing any momentum? Yep, we're just going to do that now. No problem. Like, forget centrifugal force and we're whipping around a 4-ton safe behind us. Like, as soon as we make that right turn, it's going to straighten out. There's no way it's going to travel beyond and whip around and hit us. No fucking way. It's amazing. Marcus, these movies exist in a universe of their own. They have completely removed themselves from the physical realm that we know and are now inhabiting a world of superpowers.
The Fast Universe.
It's amazing. And you know what?
They get more progressively, yeah.
And you know what? All credit goes to Justin Lin. Like, when they introduced him...
The writers apparently in 4 and 5 had a pretty good idea of where they wanted to go with it, too. And they've been pretty consistent in, like, the writing team of Fast and Furious. Where they know, like, we know where this franchise is going to end. It's just a question of filling in the blanks to get there with absurdity.
Absurdity is the perfect word.
So I just wanted to give the writer some credit because apparently they have the team kind of laid it all out with like, all right, hey, here's where we're going to go with this.
Well, yeah, but again, you bring in a brilliant director like Justin Lin who understands that vision and is like, I got you, fam.
Yeah, no, he's the guy for the job, certainly. Like he elevates it and you can go, oh, those movies are whatever. Like in that world, they work, man. They print money.
I mean, it is one ludicrous scene after another, and I mean that ludicrous is in the movie.
Yeah.
I thought that was a great joke that I thought that deserved more.
I'm sorry.
Fuck you.
The audience may be laughing their ass off right now, Michael. You don't have to play to just me. Play to them, sir. I'm a big Ludacris fan, by the way, as a rapper. He had he dropped an album every summer for a very long time.
And yeah.
Anytime it said featuring Ludacris, he was about to smash up the track.
That's right. He was that guy for a minute.
For a long time. Anyway, good. But no, I do like what movie would you say that he goes from like, and we mentioned it on the podcast before, but what movie does he go from like in number two where he's just kind of like, oh, I know a guy, and he like puts together all these street races and he's kind of like the, for lack of a better term,
Taj,
like,
right.
King of the underground kind of thing into like the ultra super computer hacker genius that he becomes by the latter movies. What movie does he make the pivot for? Yeah, because he's not in three.
No, he's not in three. Four, he, if I remember correctly, he's just the guy who knows a guy kind of thing.
Yeah, I think
five is when he's finally like, yeah, because he walks in and they have the whole like computer setup and he's like, finally, I got something I can work with. And it's like six different monitors and three different keyboards and a swivel chair.
They gave
his
character something else to do besides just being like, hey, be a rapper, but not a rapper.
Shout
out to Ludacris. He said he would never play a rapper, but then when he got the script for Hustle and Flow and he saw Skinny Black, who is a rapper,
sure,
he was like, he was such an asshole, I had to play that guy. So shout out to him for breaking his rules when you got a good script. He's like, yeah, don't want to pass up on that one. So,
well, and just to go on a tangent, like Skinny Black, we never
Hustle and Flow right now.
Yeah, from Hustle and Flow, we never actually see him rap, so like, he's not going, it's not like it's a 8 Mile situation or something like that. Like, he's just playing an asshole. Like, that could be, he could have been a movie producer, executive, whatever. It still would have had the same impact. He doesn't necessarily have to be a rapper.
That's true. I just like the fact that he openly admitted, like, yeah, at first I was like, I don't ever want to play a rapper. And then I got the script and I'm like, yeah, this dude's an asshole.
That's right.
Good
for
you, man. So, but no, he does ultimately in Fast and Furious 2. He's not a rapper, but he just seems to be a dude with connections that is just a more dialed down version
of
Ludacris.
He seems like more of an influencer. It's just one of those, like, he's just famous for being famous. He's just famous for like, oh, I'm the street racer guy.
Yeah. So that is true. Five is where he gets his more of the character.
Right. That's when he becomes the Oracle or the guy in the chair. Yeah.
So funny, we know that reference in terms of what that really means. But, and then him and Tyrese start to kind of build their tension of like, I hate you in five as well, right?
Yeah.
They start to kind of chirp at each other a lot more.
Yeah, I would call it a friendly rivalry or more of like a cousin situation where like, you know, you're not necessarily family, but like you get along, but you give each other shit.
Yeah, that's when they start to develop that in five. Like I said, the franchise takes off at five, man. I told you before. I'm glad that we are revisiting it based on
Marcus. They killed so many people in Rio de Janeiro,
bro.
When they're whipping that safe around,
several safes. Isn't it more than one? I thought
just the one. That's right. And then they do a transfer where they're like, psych, it wasn't really the safe you thought it was. I won't spoil it, but it's ridiculous. And
Marcus. Oh, they do build a safe that's not knowing what the safe looks like. They build some kind of replica.
Yes, it's exactly.
I forgot about that. Exactly. How would you know exactly? Yeah.
Also, you're doing all this for $90 million. You probably spent conservatively $12-15 million just to put this plan into action. Like,
not a bad ROI, man.
You have $12 million at your disposal. Just go do street races. You're good. Like, why would... Never mind. Yeah, doesn't matter. Because family.
Government spending. That's a good point.
It's so ridiculous. All right. It makes no sense. I'm going to give...
We'll say, let's rate five and move on, because you got, what, three more to cover? Two more to cover?
Yes, yes. Right. I'm going to give... What's rate five? I'm going to give five... 1-9-11 in Rio de Janeiro. Because they wrecked that city.
It's a very fair review.
They caused so much structural damage.
Yeah, and they're foreigners. They're like, man, like, who? Why do we let these people show up and do this for like American purposes or whatever? I'm going to rate it simply, I fucks with five.
Okay.
A little bit of alliteration. That's what I'm going to do. I fucks with five, with fast five. So we're done with five. Let's talk a little. What is the name of six? Is it just fast six?
So four was Fast and Furious.
It's not the Fast and the Furious, which four is just Fast and Furious,
which I just call Fast and Furious.
That's a good one. Right. And then five is called Fast Five.
Fast Five, and then I think Fast Six is the Fast Six.
So I don't even know the title of it, but either way, we're gonna roll right ahead.
Anyway, it's the sixth installment in the Fast and Furious franchise. Family.
What we got though, man? Take me there, son.
Okay, so looking over my notes, I think we got confused with the opening of five and six, because six is the one where they roll the bus.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, still. Go ahead. It doesn't matter to me. It's all, they all run together. There's James Bond movies at a certain point.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, that was The Spy Who Loved Me and not Moonraker. Whoops.
Right, whatever. Oops. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, they introduced The Rock. Thank you.
In six?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, who plays a version of himself.
I mean, does he play anything other than?
Moana. He's pretty damn good in Moana.
But even then, he's like, but I'm the best demigod, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a either way, but still. Point taken.
I mean.
Yeah, that's kind of what he does, though. I'm kind of like, he just plays a version of himself. But hey, so does Snoop Dogg, and everybody likes him.
Good point, actually. I will credit where credit's due. You know what I'm saying?
T-Pain, speaking of which, are living their best lives in the sense of like they get paid just to be themselves at this point. Like, if you cast Snoop Dogg in a commercial, you're like, just be Snoop Dogg for 15 seconds.
Oh, no. Did you see the most recent commercial that he had where he's
selling the stove or whatever?
Yeah. Where he's literally, he comes on, he's like, I'm just in this because they'll buy it if I'm Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
This is the best camper ever.
Yeah.
Buy it. And he was like, bling.
Yeah. Snoop Dogg, man. Paid just to be you. Anyways, go ahead. Fast six.
This is where they fight the doppelganger version of themselves. They reintroduce Michelle Rodriguez. What was her name? Letty.
Yeah.
They bring her back from the dead because she wasn't really dead. And now she has amnesia. And Vin Diesel tries to seduce her, even though she shoots him in the shoulder for some reason. I don't know. Fuck you. It doesn't matter. Car chase.
Yeah. And then so like I guess The Rock is Vin Diesel's counterpoint. Letty and whatever is like the other doppelganger, right? What's the new chick's name? Or is it Gal Gadot in this one?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But yeah. Anyways, keep going.
I mean, so
I'm gonna summarize this is my life.
So this is
summarizing the plot of the two Fast and Furious movies back to back.
Marcus.
Go ahead.
This movie's insane,
too. It's
so crazy. The Rock jumps out of a moving car off of a like a parkway, like ramp, you know, like that spiral rampway on a parking garage. Yeah. Jumps from one level to the other, just flat chested, like Jimmy Superfly Snuka style, just like, bleh. It's so great. And he walks away. There's no injury. There's no like, well, that sucked. He punches through the roof of the car. They have superhuman strength in this now, Marcus.
It gets worse. By eight. It's they like redirect missiles.
Oh my god!
Not even joking,
anyway, Marcus. They fight a tank.
Oh, I know.
They fight a tank.
I don't think I've seen six, but I saw seven. So yeah, dude, it gets. It just they jump the shark, and then they jump the shark with rocket boots, and then they're like, we could jump the shark if we give the shark a helicopter as well. So it's like they just one up it each time with absurdity.
There is a scene. There is a scene where two opposing cars are driving on opposite sides of a highway, like an overpass, like a bridge or whatever. There's a huge gap in the middle, like just pit, just ravine, right?
Uh-huh.
Vin Diesel is standing on the hood of one car. Letty is standing on the hood of the other car, coming in opposite directions at each other. They manage to crash the car, jump at each other, meet halfway. And instead of just splatting and turning to jelly and falling down into this chasm,
rupturing every internal organ,
somehow the momentum of Vin Diesel is enough to carry them safely to the other side, where they land on the windshield of a car. And instead of penetrating through it and being slashed to ribbons, just bounce up like, well, that was really fortunate that he was there.
Yeah.
Did you know you were going to catch me? I had a feeling. Like, what are we talking about? What is happening here?
I'm glad
Vin Diesel can fly.
I'm glad you're starting to. I remember at one point in your life, you're like, I just don't get those movies. I'm like, you got to get to five to realize like what this has become. It's.
I will admit, it does help if I'm like 4 to 6 drinks into it.
Yeah, I don't doubt that for a second.
So there is that, but
people line up to see these movies just knowing what like. They just embrace it now. Like, this campy nonsense. And
it is lunacy. There is nothing in this movie that makes sense, and yet it's awesome. Marcus, it's awesome.
You're a legit Fast and Furious fan now, aren't you?
The villain builds an F1 racing car with the ability to, like, go up underneath traditional street racing cars and flip them Mario Kart style.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And he just walks away.
He does the BattleBots thing, that old show on Comedy Central where you could get a shovel underneath
a wedge,
the car
yeah.
and flip it. Yeah. Yeah, that's the creation he comes up with.
They crash a like 23 wheeler, like this military style 23
war rig from freaking Mad Max Fury Road.
They run a cable and cut it in half, and then, oh, by the way, there's a tank inside, so it just rolls over everything.
I forgot about that part, yeah.
And then somehow this tank is just firing randomly on civilians to distract and try and trap in Dominic Toretto and his crew. There are so many people that died in this. Needlessly, this was a terrorist act. This was 9/11 times 1,000, which I can't even do that math.
Way too much math. Way too much math, sir.
Marcus, this movie is nuts.
Yeah.
They stop a tank by just anchoring it, just like, oh yeah, that'll just stop it. And it flips. And then it's like legitimate. They're like, this thing weighed 10 million pounds beforehand, was rolling all over everything. Now all of a sudden, it's made of paper.
Yeah, plot armor. These heroes, Michael. The contracts alone for these movies, I don't even mean just like the sum of the money that they're spending for these guys. Now that, you know, it's a certified blockbuster, like, you know, you're going to make $1 billion off of these movies. But I just mean like the amount of, like, what people don't know is some of these action heroes, they have what we call hit counts.
Right.
In a movie where you can't get beat up that bad if you're the protagonist. And like, I know Statham has one in his contracts. I know The Rock has one. Vin Diesel produces these movies and is just like, anything that goes against his character or what he feels is a trespass against the Fast and Furious franchise.
Nobody ever
He's
loses.
Not getting beat up.
Yeah, no. Everybody goes hit for hit in this. Everybody walks away. Like there's no definitive winner.
It's Who Framed Roger Rabbit in the sense of like they must have the
equal
amount of hit.
Mickey Mouse and Bugs Bunny must have exact screen frame time.
Yeah, like same amount of drawings.
Right.
It's wild.
Right. It's
yeah. So I just picture the contracts of these stars and they're, you know, prima donna.
Oh God, it's so ridiculous. In this movie, The Rock is so badass. He convinces a guy to give up his clothes like the Terminator.
Oh yeah.
Just like, hey, that's a nice watch. Let me take that. Also, give me your shirt. Also, you know what? Those pants really match this shirt. You should give it to me. And the dude's just like, yep, yes, sir, Mr. Johnson.
He's like the ATF agent or something like that, right?
He's DDS. I don't know what that means, but it's like Directive Defensive Service or something like that. They're like military contractors, but like employed by whatever the fuck country they need to.
Yeah, but they're like specialized in stopping street racing or something absurd. Like, it's like the counterpoint to Dominic Toretto's crew.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, they would invest money in like, what?
Because since Dominic Toretto was so successful, there's been a rise in the in the style of high street racing theft.
Absurd. Like, absurd.
This is a world where like high octane mid highway robberies are just commonplace now. This is just a thing.
It's Grand Theft Auto Online is what it's become.
Yes.
Like, you know what I mean? Where it's like you have multiple players entering, each on their own missions, each just causing chaos through the city of whatever. Yeah, that's what it's become. That's the best way I can describe the Fast and Furious movies.
It's
Grand
nuts.
Theft Auto Online.
It's nuts. I have in my notes, and this is worth noting, tank escape, dangerous highway stunts, who cares about collateral damages and loss of life, whatever, we got a fucking car tank, fuck you!
You took my cough out of me right there, sir. Yeah, man, I don't know what to say except, yep, you're right on every one of these. It's absurd, Michael.
They have...
What is your favorite part of six? Well, like, I would say five, you liked the bank heist, right? What is six?
Right, where they're whipping around the safe mm-hmm. through the streets of Rio. That was pretty dope. I'm not going to lie.
What is your favorite part of six?
See, that's kind of a tie because it's mostly just The Rock and Vin Diesel staring ominously at each other and like making vague threats of like, I wish you would, like, I could.
Like, yeah.
What are you fucking... somebody either kiss or fight. What are you going to do?
The crux of the movie is like very homoerotic, very a lot of tension amongst male characters in that sense.
Oh, and The Rock is sweating in every single scene.
Dude.
Sweating. Nobody else is sweating. And this dude just... like glycerin falling off his forehead in heavy droplets.
I'm not trying to accuse anybody, but if I were to make an assumption about The Rock...
Careful
and
now.
And if you look at
That's my personal friend.
If you look at him in previous movies
uh-huh.
and his size
uh-huh.
and how vascular he is, like, I don't know, two movies before that, uh-huh. whatever he was in, and then look at him in this movie, I'm just going to say... he has one heck of a physical trainer and personal chef or whatever the hell it is to amass like 60 pounds of raw muscle and increase your vascular volume, I don't know, 2.5 times in like a span of a year. Like,
listen, that is clean living. That is boiled fish 4 times a yeah. day, quinoa, yeah. Maybe occasionally red wine, according to him.
Yeah, dude. Miss me with all of that, bro.
I don't know what you're trying to imply, yeah, sir. I won't have you talk about my friend Dwayne The Rock Johnson like that.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm just saying.
Personal friend. Please come on the podcast.
Look, I'm just saying I want to know your regiment, and I'm sure if I follow it exactly as you lay out, I'm sure I'll yield the exact same results. I'm sure. Anyways, that's just my two cents.
What you're going to want to do is you're going to want to drain a horse like a vampire.
Oh man.
Oh yeah. It's amazing. I can't.
What's your favorite part of six though? You never yeah. Sorry, we got distracted.
Oh yeah.
You got stopped
the snarling tension between Vin Diesel and The Rock is great. The tank escape scene is pretty awesome. At some point The Rock and Vin Diesel team up to fight the two like main henchmen, the two goons. And they do a doomsday device where, like, one of them puts the bad guy on his shoulder and the other guy jumps off the ropes and knocks him off of the clothesline.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They do a literal doomsday device. I literally stopped and went, doomsday device!
Michael's calling out wrestling moves.
I was. It was great. Oh, my favorite part, the very end where they finally tie in how Han died in 3, but he's been back through, like, 5, 6, and whatever. Like, because apparently now 3 takes place in between 6 and 7, whatever. Fuck you.
Yeah, a little Bow Wow
continuity
comes back.
Continuity doesn't matter.
A little Bow Wow comes back.
Jason Statham Stinger.
Oh, yeah. As,
where
as Hobbs. Or is he Shaw, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Where he's Shaw. Yeah, yeah. Where, like, he's revealed as, like, the big bad guy who is behind the machinations of Fast and Furious 3 the entire time. Like, yes, please. Can we bring in Jason Statham? I'm so excited to see how he fits into this. Please.
Yeah. I don't even remember. I know I've seen 7. I know Tony Jaa's in it briefly, and he fights Paul Walker.
In 7?
Yeah, he's in 7. Briefly, yeah.
What?
Yeah.
And he fights Paul Walker?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you're telling me a Porsche did what Tony Jaa could not?
Pretty much.
Oh.
Pretty much. Yeah. I see your joke there. Terrible. Oh, man. So are we still Fast and Furious-ing? Or what are you
going to do? I am so into these at this point, Marcus.
I'm so glad, man. We'll come back to 7, 8, and 9.
I'm trying to get
10, but.
I'm trying to get shoulders deep in this.
Let's do it, buddy.
They can only get better. At some point, apparently, they go to space.
Michael, I don't want to spoil it for you, but yes, like I said, they divert missiles. We're like 2 steps away from legitimate TIE fighters. And X-Wings. Like, we're that close in just scale of absurdity and what they can do and, like, the access they have to, like, anybody.
Oh, they have,
any government would have been like, can we just drone strike these dudes and call this
exactly,
a day? Like, these
exactly.
dudes are terrorists.
Right, like, right, right. So we're going to pay you $11 million to destroy our city when we could just spend $2 million on a drone strike and hit these guys when they're on a convoy somewhere. Great.
Yeah,
never mind.
It's absurd. It's
Marcus. It's insane. It's and again, all credit goes to Justin Lin because he literally just had the idea of like, okay, so hear me out. It's Fast and the Furious, but what if their cars were ninjas?
That's a good way to describe it.
What if the cars were just extensions of their superpowers? And now anytime they're behind the wheel of a car, they can do anything.
That is the most apt description I've ever heard of that.
It's only going to get better. I can't wait. It's ridiculous.
It's
bullshit.
Worse and better. It's worse because it's better, and it's better because it's worse. So just buckle up, and I mean that, pun intended.
There we go. All right. Okay. That's right, a good that's a good rating, actually.
Yeah, buckle up. There you go.
There we go.
So what do you rate it?
Oh, man. I'm going to give it, oh, man. Fast 6, I'm going to give it physics and geometry be damned.
We're not scientists, Doc.
We ain't scientists, Doc.
There it is. Do you want to take a break?
We should. Let's take a break and let's hear from our sponsor, a sponsor that is very near and dear to our heart, Forgotten Block Butcher and Market in Cocoa Village, 204 Brevard Avenue. Go see our cousin Josh. The man knows his meats. He can help hook you up with any sort of delicatessen needs you might have. The number there is 321-339-9089. Give him a call. From our sponsor, Forgotten Block Butcher and Market in Cocoa, Florida. If ever you're down in the Florida area on the East Coast, give them a look up.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. good quality meats, good delicatessens, you know.
I'm sure, if I'm going to just say this, phenomenal customer service. I'm sure it exists in there. You know what I mean? Everything you might want in a shop.
And as always, we thank you, as always, Cousin Josh, for your patronage for the What You've Been Watching podcast.
Top tier legioning right there.
That's right. That's right.
Top tier member right there.
That's our dedication to you, our fans, our legions.
Oh, yeah,
for real. Anywho's, brother.
Yes, sir.
The other reason they tune in, I've been flapping my gums, telling all about Fast and Furiousness and family.
Which I appreciate.
What you been watching, my man?
First off, I've been getting off the flu, to keep with the alliteration.
Ooh.
So pardon my So, no, man, I there was a lot of things that we were going to talk about that just kind of fell by the wayside. Still watching cartoons, still keeping up with sports activities, watching a little bit of NFL Hard Knocks.
Okay.
You know, they're doing, instead of, they usually just do one team midseason, but in this particular season, they're doing all four teams of the AFC North. So for those that don't know, that would be the Baltimore Ravens, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Cleveland Browns, and the Cincinnati Bengals. They're kind of doing a all the seasons.
What a riveting season, I'm sure.
Well, the Ravens and the Pittsburgh Steelers are doing pretty well. The Browns had Jameis Winston playing, and that was interesting just because
he's a
charismatic dude, but he just got benched, so he won't probably be starting in the show next week. But yeah, they're just trying to change up the pace. It gets really formulaic when he's just like, we'll do this team now, and then it's really hit or miss if it's even interesting whatsoever. Who wants to reveal personalities? But this one, you can tell the star of the show is the coach of the Steelers, Mike Tomlin.
Mm-hmm.
He's just an old school dude, and he's like really one of the last few like defensive oriented coaches that's like, you could tell where he spends his time.
Okay.
And he's a very much so a tone setter, and he's a really no nonsense dude. And if you're ever looking for somebody to win the podium, post game, pre game interviews, that's your guy.
Okay.
So he'll just go up there and just say, like, he benched one guy and started Russell Wilson at quarterback. And they're like, what made you decide to do that? He's like, because I'm highly compensated, and that's why they pay me. And it ended up it ended up working out, and they like went on this really great winning streak. And he's like, yeah, that's why I'm highly compensated, you know? So
it's kind of what they pay me to do, baby.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, it's just kind of the flavor you get. So between that and just some likable guys on the Ravens. So shout out to all my Baltimore people. Sounds like a bird or something. So yeah, that's kind of midseason, and then just I get really caught up with sports during this time of the year, and went on a cruise recently to Turks and Caicos.
Oh, see Grand Turks and Caicos.
We actually just saw
most Turk. People can only afford Caicos.
We went to Turk, which was it's a 7 mile island, so we saw most of it. We just rented a golf cart and rode around, and a lot of wild donkeys there.
Sweet,
it's pretty cool. Some of them are very sweet and are very interested in you trying to give them some food, but we fell short of because we didn't have any carrots or anything.
I do love a great ass.
There you go. Thanks, Al Pacino.
Ooh-wah.
So outside of that, though, man, I wrapped up a little bit of late Christmas watching. You
know? Okay.
And I don't want to spend too much time on it because we did talk about it last Christmas,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I did watch A Muppet Christmas Carol again.
How good is that?
Man, I'm willing to throw its name in there with some classics, and I'll mention a couple movies that we've talked about on the podcast before, and I'll let you at home see if you can figure out where we're going with this. I'm going to mention it with the ranks of the movies like Jaws.
Oh, okay.
With the ranks of Iron Man 1, which we've spoken about, which we've talked about Indiana Jones, the very first one there.
Uh-huh.
Trying to
Raiders,
think.
Right?
Yeah, Raiders. And I know that there's others that we've discussed, but I'm talking about throwing it in the realm of what we call a perfect movie. I think A Muppet Christmas Carol may hit the mark, man.
Okay. Maybe too campy, but I'm finding hard time arguing against that, actually, because highly enjoyable movie. Like, if you ask me which Christmas movie I want to watch, it's probably going to be that one. Little musical, little emotional. There's great acting. I mean, Michael Caine swings for the fences.
Yeah, he crushes it. We've said it like 40 times on the show, but it works well because he treats the Muppets as actors and he treats them with reverence.
Right.
And so that's why this one works. Right. There's no winking at the camera from him.
Right. He treats acting alongside Kermit with the same reverence as like Laurence Olivier or something like
that. Yeah. And so there's no winking at the camera from him, but it just works, man. Like they do the musical thing, in which I like, in terms of they introduce things with music, in terms of whether it just be setting. It's like, hey, it's Christmas Day, we're going to sing about London, whatever. Right, like you get settings.
So Scrooge, what a miser.
You get vital information from it, and then they don't double down again in the songs. You know, they call back at the very final song, you know, to some of the earlier pieces.
But that's like a medley.
They just, or just throw in like a part of the score just real quick in that, just to try to like, hey, here's how far we've come, which, you know, take it, love it, leave it. That's kind of how it operates. I don't know. It's good though, man. It's genuinely very funny. The music works. You say campy, it's like it's a Muppet movie. So
sure.
I don't know, man. I think it's up there. It's emotional in some senses. The way that he is genuinely disturbed and distraught, and he wants to truly change his ways by the end of it, and you believe it. And what we consider to be a perfect movie of like, is there any part of it where you, not only just within the realms of like suspending your disbelief, but can you pull at any plot threads? Can you pull at like, yeah, but the makeup in that one scene really took me out of it.
Sure.
Pointing to something that like you kind of pull on that and the whole thing kind of unravels, you know? And again, we've talked about it 1,000 times where it's like, here's the parameters. If you can see my hands, I'm holding up a side of like parentheses almost.
Right.
Everything within these parentheses is what we're allowed to do. And as long as we stay within these rules that we've set up, we're good.
Right.
If we're watching a Superman movie and obviously Superman can do all these things, he has laser eyes and ice breath and whatever, and you buy into that, that's his power set. And then at the end of the movie, in the third act, when he just needs to breathe underwater, now we can do that. You're like, wait,
time by flying backwards.
Right. Yeah, it's a better example.
Right.
You're like, wait a second.
Right. Like, or erase Lois Lane's memory with just a kiss.
And yeah.
Like, when did he do that? When did he get roofie powers?
So that's what we mean. And I think the Muppet Christmas Carol fits the bill, man.
I would say, in retrospect, thinking about, I said it was too campy. You're right. It is a Muppet movie. So why wouldn't it be campy? I think that that's directly part of the recipe, you know? Like, you're going to have these vaudeville jokes and the over the top, you know, rats flying and getting sent into, you know, lantern boxes and lighting on fire and stuff. Yeah, of course.
Directly addresses, I mean, he breaks the fourth wall the whole time. He's like, who are you talking to? He's like, I'm the narrator. He's like, how do you know that? He's like, I'm the narrator. I'm omniscient. Or what does he
right,
say?
Right. Omniscient.
Yeah. So the camp never really bothered me in terms of we're openly winking at the camera from the opening frame.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't want to spend a tremendous amount of time on it. I just wanted to hear your thoughts about introducing it into, you know, I know we don't, it's not like a wall of fame situation, but in terms of its consideration for being a perfect movie.
Apparently I've heard or read before that movie is the closest iteration to the original text in terms of lines directly taken from the original A Christmas Carol and then repeated on screen, with the exception of course, Gonzo breaking the fourth wall and Rizzo's little sides or whatever. But for the most part, they follow it almost like the play, very, very directly. That being said, I mean, yeah, Michael Caine's pretty on point. It's funny. You get, you know, Robin, the little frog playing Tiny Tim, you know, God bless us, everyone.
Man. I was going to say they cast the right Muppets in the right roles.
Yeah.
Like having Fossington, whatever, who works at the Rubber Chicken Factory.
Yes,
who
he owns. Yes, yeah, that's exactly. Such a good Fossington,
yeah. Yeah, Fossington, yeah. And he's like, his address to everyone, he's like, I wrote a speech. He's like, Merry Christmas to all.
Right.
And then the guys rip him, Marley and Marley. Yeah.
Yeah, Marley and Marley. Yeah, yeah.
Well, they're short at least.
Yeah, yeah. Played by Waldorf and Statler. Statler and Waldorf?
Yes.
Statler and Waldorf. That's it.
The two old dudes who heckle everybody.
That's right.
So, yeah, I like that.
And hey, get up. We're leaving. Is it over? No, but we're leaving.
I did want Miss Piggy and Kermit to have like one abomination child because they had
half,
were like
half frog, half
kill me. Yeah, like I kind of wanted to. That would have put the movie over the top because like all the daughters were pigs and all the boys were were frogs. I just wanted to have like one abomination. It's like they keep chained in the basement.
go throw down the scraps to your sister, brother.
Yeah. To the frog pig.
To the frog pig. So, yeah.
Was it a good Christmas, brother?
Oh, man, poor guy. He didn't ask for this. Anyways, I'm sure that that Muppet exists somewhere, crudely stitched together.
I want to see it now.
I know. It's kind of rad. So I'm happy to report it. Sounds like we're introducing Muppet Christmas Carol into perfect movies.
I'm not necessarily opposed to that, but you know what? If you have any conflict with that idea, write us in at whatyoubeenwatching@gmail.com. Whatyoubeenwatchingpodcast@gmail.com.
Slide in the DMs. But yeah, let us know. Well done there. Way to plug back to the community, Michael. Yeah, write us in. Let us know what you think. And the next thing I watched.
Yes, sir. Oh, wait. What do you rate Muppet Christmas Carol?
I will rate it one weird ghost of Christmas past who's supposed to be a girl, but they didn't actually want to cast like a little girl, so they just made a really oddly shaped Muppet ghost little girl.
Okay.
That's what I'll rate it. It works, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
That exactly translates to it's a perfect movie. That's a long way around. Now, the other movie I watched, so I spent a little time on Disney Plus, clearly. Dude, I watched a Goofy movie.
Oh,
dude.
I love a Goofy movie. That came out, what, 1995? Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, 95. Okay. I remember really liking that movie as a kid, and I watched it for the first time as an adult. The movie holds up, man.
Yeah. It's a really, really good, like, road trip movie. Yeah. Father and son road trip movie. Yeah.
It also does the whole, you know, everything could be solved if everyone wasn't so short-sighted.
Mm-hmm.
And I started picking on the main character, Roxanne, the one who Max has a crush on.
Yeah, Goofy's son, the girl he's interested in. Yeah.
There's Goofy and his son Max, and then Max is really into Roxanne. And at first, you know, he finally works up the courage to ask her to go to a party to watch the Powerline concert at her friend's house. And he has to bail because Goofy's like, we're going on a vacation because I feel like I'm losing you as a son.
Right, right.
And so he lies to Roxanne and says, well, I'm going to the Powerline concert because my dad knows him. I'm going to be on stage. And so clearly it's a you have to be on two dates at the same time situation.
Right, exactly. Right.
And so that's the part of it. And one of the things I bumped up to, but once I took a step back and realized, is when he tells Roxanne, he tries to cancel the date, being like, hey, look, it's my dad. And she's like, well, I guess I'll just go with somebody else then. At first, I was like, man, what a bitch. She should just understand that this isn't his doing. And then I realized, I'm like, oh, they're emotional teenagers.
Right.
Like, in some reason, I bought back into like, yeah, they're not going to make rash decisions. And this is, how am I going to call her a bitch for being rash when I don't call him an asshole for outright lying to her?
Right.
You know, I know Powerline, you know, and it's, right, they're teenagers.
Right,
and once something clicked in that of being like, oh yeah, they're not going to have it all figured out. Young and in
interesting.
Love.
Yeah.
I gave it a pass.
The impetuousness of youth kind of thing, or the desire to be cool, or just like, I really just want you to like me. You know, that overwhelming desire of teenagers and
yeah,
young adults, just be like, just approve.
Pretty much. And he had already spoken to her and like asked her. That was his whole plan of like the last day of school. He's like, got him and Pauly Shore were going to, you know, put on a fake Powerline concert. Shout out to Powerline. And what's his name? Telvin. Who sang Powerline? Telvin something?
That's on you, brother.
Let me Google that real quick. Hang on. We'll be right back.
I will say that is the perfect amalgamation of like late 80s, early 90s pop singers. Like, he's the perfect blend of Michael Jackson and Prince.
Absolutely.
And might I just say that his song, what is it? High Wire or High Life? Powerline, yeah.
It's Tevin Campbell. That's who it was.
Campbell, okay. Yeah, sorry. That song is a banger.
Yeah, it says right here. I'm sorry, I was Googling it while you were talking. It says, Powerline was inspired by a mix of Michael Jackson, Prince, and Bobby Brown.
Perfect. And there we go.
Pretty
there
they nailed that if yeah. they had one for it.
Yeah.
If we listen to each other's
probably
heart.
An expensive song, actually, we're singing. Now that
hey, that's why we cut it off there.
Yeah, for real. But no, like it works. Like you said, it is a good road trip movie. It's a good father-son movie, actually. It's a good, in a weird way, kind of coming-of-age tale about how to be a dad. And there's a scene where he says, you know, kind of Goofy and Max, as the road trip goes off the road and off the rails, about... kind of just Goofy tells him, like, I just felt like I was losing you. And maybe he overreached by being like, we're going on an impromptu trip Idaho to go to Lake Destiny. He didn't listen to his son in that moment. And he said, you know, no matter what you're doing, I just want to be a part of your life. You know,
right.
I just, and he says it in such a heartfelt way, and I'm butchering the line, but it actually is really heartfelt of like, yeah. I just want to be a part of it. Whatever it is, man, just don't box me out. I don't want to be viewing you grow up from the sideline. You know,
It's a single dad who has always been there for his son and always been part of his son's life. And now that his son is becoming a man and finding his own decisions and trying to find his way in the world, they're drifting apart, and it's him trying to reclaim, albeit in, it's an impulsive move, but it comes from a place of general concern and general love, you know, like it's, I want to still be a part of my son before I lose him forever. You know, he's growing up, he's going to go to college, we're going to drift apart. What's the lasting impression that I'm going to have on my kid? And, you know, the kid is meanwhile like, you got to let me do my thing. You got to let me figure out what my path in this world is. Like, you're doing your goofy thing. I got my Max thing. And sometimes those things are just incompatible.
The movie opens on a dream sequence of him running to Roxanne through a field. And when he finally gets there, he becomes his dad and his feet grow and the little knot on his head. And he goes, gore? Yeah. And he lets out one of the yucks. And so that's his fear. He's like, I don't want to be this guy, but it's like, man, your dad actually has a lot of good qualities in terms of being a father. And he's genuine, like love or hate his goofiness. He's who he is. And he's not afraid to be that. He's not afraid to go to the possum hoedown and like have a good time and dance and be silly. And while it annoys the crap out of you, it's like, you gotta have, there's something about authenticity that
he's trying, he's putting in the effort. Yeah. He's maybe not listening to Max's wants and hierarchy of needs in terms of growing out of his father's shadow, but he's not, it's harmless. He's not doing it to try and, you know, maliciously or to try and
sabotage
sabotage or put Max in a box. He just wants to be there. And that's a really heartfelt sentiment.
It really gets you there. And Max is certainly not wrong in the sense of if he could have expressed like, Dad, I don't mind taking a trip with you, but like I just had the courage to work. Like finally things are going well for me at school. I'm not being picked on. I'm not being like, I did this cool dance in front of everybody and they thought I was, and then I got in trouble with the principal and, you know, you can't tell him all that, but like, and now the girl wants me to go to a party on Friday. It's like, we can leave Sunday. How about that, Dad? You know, but Goofy is afraid he's losing his son and he feels the pressure of time and he's listening to his boss, Pete, who's telling him like, tells him the whole movie, you got to keep him under your thumb. And there's a cool scene where Pete later catches up with Goofy on the road and he says, and they're kind of having a talk about like, hey, Goof, I hate to tell you, your son changed the map. You're going to LA. You're not going to whatever. And he's like, you know what? My son may not be perfect, but I know my son loves me. And he kind of says, like, what can you say about your kid?
Right.
Well, my son respects me. And he's like, sure he does. And he just kind of walks off.
Right.
Respects you kind of thing. And you can tell at that point, Goofy was willing to listen to outside sources but not listen to his son. And so it's actually a pretty good movie in the terms of it being a father-son tale and a little bit of coming of age, like I mentioned. And it's also, Goofy is an underrated freaking character in all the cartoondom. And he crushes, like, he is
the king of pratfalls and horrible pranks, you know what I mean? Like the king of, like, anytime you need somebody to fall flat on their face, Goofy's your guy.
Yeah, and he's awesome in this movie. He's perfect. This wouldn't work if it was, I can't see it working if it was a Donald Duck movie, you know what I mean? Or a fill-in-the-blank character.
Sure,
it would just be different. This iteration of it, the title and everything, a Goofy movie, it plays, man. It plays.
Well, because Goofy is, he's the Buster Keaton of the Warner Brothers, or not Disney, Warner, Disney family, in terms of, he's the man who's going to try so hard to do the right thing and just constantly fail, albeit somehow upwards. Like, he's constantly falling flat on his face, but yet he somehow finds a way to make it work out just by sheer gumption or just tenacity.
Divine intervention at some point.
Sure.
And they sing a song about that, about like, hey, sometimes you're insufferable and your personality, you know, he says something, one of the lines in the song is like, people may think in so many words, like you're drunk or intoxicated, but that's just you it's kind of the hand you're dealt, kind of.
Right,
thing.
Right.
So it's I liked the movie. I enjoyed all 90 minutes of it, truly. But I walked away feeling like every beat that it wanted to hit, it worked on. And so I actually got a little bit emotional at one scene. I was like, oh man, Goofy movie about to choke me up a little bit. I laughed. It did every box that I think it wanted to check, it did for me. And I forgot that that movie did that. So I'll probably be revisiting this movie on a more regular basis. I was nice. Actually really dug it, man.
Kind of emotionally cathartic or something like that.
Yeah, and I remember like liking it as a kid too. It wasn't like something like you go back and watch some of these movies. You're like, this is not
right. Why did I enjoy this?
You know, but this one actually, it holds up, man. It holds up. So,
okay.
And man, Goofy's my guy too. So shout out to him in Kingdom Hearts as well. Appreciate him saving the day with Sora.
So. Nerd.
Yeah. So on that note, I will rate a Goofy movie. Two.
Good. I like it.
I did that with the flu too, so or recovering from it. That's about all I've been watching though. And also, F the people on Rotten Tomatoes who got a Goofy movie at 59%. We gotta pump those numbers up. Pump those numbers right on. It's way better than a 59% movie.
I would agree.
Point out your flaws and be hater ass Huey us at whatyoubeenwatchingpodcast@gmail.com if you want to write in and dare challenge us as to what is wrong and why that 59% validity is there on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't think you can. I think everyone would be surprised by that number.
Fair enough.
So Goofy movie. All right, now here we go. We're going to pivot out. We're going to try to find a fun way to end this show. I've been wanting to play this with Michael for a little while. It's a game called This or That. And what it is...
Called This or That.
This or That.
It's time for This or That.
With your host, Dizzle. Dizzle, that's all it is. So I'm going to shuffle up some cards real quick off mic, and then we're going to come back. And I'll just explain how the game works real quick. And we're going to do it with movies, but I'm going to use things for the example that is not movies. So let's just say the category would be ice cream.
Okay.
Right? You can use whatever metric you want to come up with your solution as to why you choose what you choose. I don't care. It is irrelevant. I don't need you to argue about what it is or explain it to me. It could be different on each set of rounds. But for example, let's just start. Let's go chocolate or vanilla?
Chocolate.
Okay. Now, vanilla is going to go into a pile, and you're never going to see that again.
Okay.
All right? But chocolate is going to stay until it gets bested. Now, if chocolate ends up being the winner, then it runs through the gamut. I have 25 cards. All right?
Got you.
So then we would go chocolate or strawberry?
Still going to be chocolate.
Okay. And then we go chocolate or cookies and cream?
Ooh, cookies and cream? Okay. Yeah.
And then you would never see chocolate again, and it would be cookies and cream versus this. So,
it's Highlander rules. There can be only one.
Pretty much. And so don't try to hold on to it. It's just simply look at the match at hand. Don't be like, but I don't want just the match at hand. And you can use whatever metric you want. Which one do I want to watch right now? Use that for one. And then, I just genuinely like that movie better. Whatever. Use whatever metric you want.
Okay. So I'm not beholden to any particular metric on each throughout the whole game. I could change it based on each question.
Yep. Gotcha. Whatever the hell you want to use.
Okay.
All right, so let me shuffle up these cards, and we'll be right back. All right, and we are back. I just wanted to fire off this little show with you called This or That.
This or that.
I like the Seinfeld voice. So again, you're going to pick between these two, the one that you pick is going to move on. The one that you do not pick, you won't see again.
It goes away. There can be only one.
All right. Are you ready?
Let's do this, sir.
I have The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Okay.
Or Ernest, Scared, Stupid.
Controversial, but I'm going to go Ernest, Scared, Stupid.
I think that's the right call. Okay. Ooh.
Ernest P. Worrell over Clint Eastwood all day.
And again, I shuffled these, so I have no idea what the order is. So. We have Ernest, Scared, Stupid, or we have Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story.
Oh, shit.
It gets tough fast.
Oh, I got to kill one of my childhood heroes. Mm-hmm. It's going to be Walk Hard.
Walk Hard, Move
Walk
Along.
Walk Hard.
I like the fact you're not overthinking this.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be a rapid pace game.
I don't feel good about it.
It's done.
Can I watch both?
Nope.
God damn it.
Again, it's your metrics that you set. All right, now we have Walk Hard or The Crow. The first Crow with Brandon Lee.
Okay, I was going to say.
Yeah. Walk Hard or The Crow.
I'm going to go Walk Hard. I don't feel good about it. Why are you doing this to me?
That's the game. It's the game. All right, are we ready?
I got to kill my darlings.
Look, Walk Hard came out early. It's going to be a tough contender. But we have, again, Walk Hard, or we have Akira. Akira, as we like to say. The anime. Akira or Walk Hard.
Fuck. See, this one is hard because I really appreciate both for different reasons. But in the same breath, they both take really big swings with what they're trying to do, and they both knock it out of the park. I'm going to go Walk Hard.
I like it. It's on a tear. It's on like a 5-game win streak. Are we ready?
Oh, man. Okay,
There's 25 total of these, so I don't know how
far we're in, so I got a lot more.
Ooh, you're going to hate this one. We have Walk Hard or we have Tropic Thunder.
Sophie's Choice. Holy shit.
Walk Hard or Tropic Thunder.
They're both so quotable.
They're both very good.
And they both, Kristen Wiig is amazing in that. But also Robert Downey Jr. doing blackface.
And our first ever underrated performance of the week. You remember who it was?
Brandon T. Jackson.
That's right. Well played.
He was in Fast and Furious 4. I forgot to mention.
Oh, he was?
Yeah.
Oh, dang.
He was one of the racers.
I didn't know that.
I literally was like, that's Al Pacino.
Yeah, that's right.
Anywho, so yeah, shout out to you.
Yeah.
Fast and Furious 4.
He is a friend of the show.
Fast and Furious.
He is a friend of the show, Brandon T. Jackson.
That's right. Or not. Please come on.
Yeah, but we got Walk Hard or we got Tropic Thunder.
Damn it. I don't like this game, Wendy.
You got to pick.
I'm going to go Walk Hard because it has funny musics.
There you go. Walk Hard on a tear.
Oh, no.
Okay, here we go. Walk Hard or Tombstone?
Oh, shit. Tombstone.
Tombstone?
Tombstone.
All right, Tombstone moves on.
Shit.
Okay.
Shit.
Oh, here we go. All right.
Can I say, just based solely on the fact that Val Kilmer crushes any performance ever in that movie?
Does John C. Reilly not, though?
It's
gone. We can't go back. I'm not picking it up off the floor.
Does not the wind love the dirt?
You ladies, man, me, sir. All right, you ready for this next one?
Sure.
We have Tombstone.
Uh-huh.
Or we have Face Off.
Face Off.
There we go.
Face Off's going to be a hard contender.
I put movies I know you might
not,
like.
I'm not going to lie. Face Off's going to be a hard contender.
There's some good ones in here. Okay. Oh, you're about to... You say it's a hard contender. Here's the one I thought was going to win. We have Face Off or we have The Princess Bride.
Son of a bitch.
Face Off or The Princess Bride?
I got to go Princess Bride just based on how many times I've seen it.
There you go.
But I don't...
Too bad. Nope, nope.
We can't go back?
Nope. I'm not picking it up off the floor. I'm not bending down there, sir.
Okay.
It's a rapid fire game.
Princess
Quick
Bride.
Decisions.
Okay.
Princess Bride moves on over Face Off. That's what that is.
Okay. I don't...
It's done.
Okay.
It's done.
That might be the one I kind of... No, I don't regret it. I got to move forward.
We have The Princess Bride, or we have The Matrix.
Princess Bride.
Okay.
Princess Bride. Again, I don't feel good about it, but...
This is the game.
Just based on the sheer number of times I've seen Princess Bride, it's going to win out.
That's kind of what I thought, but... All right, we have The Princess Bride, or we have Up.
Oh, Princess Bride.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got to remember to throw out the right card so that way I don't have to get there. Go on the ground and pick it up. Okay, we have The Princess Bride or Reality Bites.
Again, going to be Princess Bride. That one's a little easier.
Okay. All right, this one. We have The Princess Bride or The Dark Knight.
Princess Bride.
Okay. Okay, we have The Princess...
Christopher Nolan's a hack.
Oh, stop. Stop.
Hitting that hater-ass Huey alarm.
He's a lot of things. A hack isn't one of them. His imagination may exceed his grasp at some point.
He's pretentious.
Okay. It insists upon itself.
That's right.
Okay. We have The Princess Bride or we have Pulp Fiction.
Oh, man.
Princess Bride or Pulp Fiction.
They're both movies done in a modern classical style. I can't. Oh. So quotable. I'm Uma Thurman.
Yeah.
Also
Sam
Jackson. Also Sean Wallace.
But also the Dread Pirate.
Also RUS's. Yeah, I'm going to go Princess Bride. Princess Bride. Yeah.
It's done. It's on the floor.
Yep. See, the hard part of
this... No, it's moving on. It's on the floor.
No, the hard part of this is the rapid fire of it. Like, if I want to sit here and contemplate and have time to think about it, but the fact that you're like, I need an answer. It's just like, fuck.
This is the way the game goes, Michael.
Okay.
Tough decisions. We have The Princess Bride or Scent of a Woman. Ooh-ah. Scent of a Woman.
As much as I love Scent of a Woman, it's going to be Princess Bride. For sure. Yeah.
Okay, here we go. I was hoping we were going to get to some other matchups, but you'll see why. We have The Princess Bride or we have Logan. Third Wolverine movie. Princess Bride or Logan?
Damn.
Tough decisions being made right
I'm
here.
Gonna choose,
Michael is actually
I'm gonna choose
sweating.
Princess Bride, but just because it's my own, like, I know that Logan is a better movie. But just nostalgia for me, I love Princess Bride.
You don't have to explain the metrics.
No, I do.
I appreciate you doing that.
Just because people will be mad.
You could change the metrics in this very round and be like, I remember I ate a cheeseburger one time while I was watching this next movie, and I really liked that cheeseburger. So that's why I'm going to pick that movie. The metrics don't matter.
I can hear the angry emails coming in like, dear ass faces.
Please write us in with a dear ass face and especially channel it towards Michael. I'll read it. And enjoy it, please. Anyways, we have The Princess Bride or we have The Godfather. The Princess Bride or The Godfather.
Princess Bride is a shorter, funner movie. I'm sorry. Godfather's a masterpiece, but just give me an hour and 10 minutes of charm and fun fantasy.
There is something about The Princess Bride that was mentioned earlier in the show that we've considered this. But anyways, we have The Princess Bride or we have Godzilla Minus One.
Oh, shit.
Godzilla Minus One.
Again, I'm going to go Princess Bride just based on...
It's on the floor. I'm very quick with these.
I don't like any of these decisions I'm making.
It's too bad. That's the point of it. Anyways, we have The Princess Bride or we have Dogma. Kevin Smith's Dogma or The Princess Bride.
Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
I do love me some Dogma. Chris Rock.
It's a good movie.
Alanis Morissette is God.
The great George Carlin. Rest in peace.
That's right.
We've seen both of these movies a lot, though.
I know.
Dogma was in real heavy rotation.
I was going to say, this one, I'm actually trying to think of which one I have seen more, because it's a hard count.
I won't influence your decision by any means. I just need an answer. The Princess Bride?
It's going to be Princess Bride.
Oh, there it is. No, the Dogma's on the floor.
I hate it.
Okay. I tried to match some of these up. We have The Princess Bride or we have District 9.
Yeah, that's going to be Princess Bride.
Okay.
Damn, this one's on a tear.
I'm telling you. It's what it takes, man. You have The Princess Bride or you have your beloved Clerks.
Oh, son of a bitch.
Here's the nitty-gritty. The Princess Bride or Kevin Smith's directorial writing debut in Clerks?
I'm going to go Clerks.
It's on the floor.
It's grunge cinema.
You go. Clerks knocks off The Princess Bride.
Yeah.
Too bad. It's on the floor. I'm not going down there. I've mentioned that 1,000 times and I'll mention it more. I'm not going down there to shuffle through it. We have Clerks or we have Blade Runner.
Oh, fuck.
I was going with the first Blade Runner on this one.
Right, yeah.
Clerks or Blade Runner?
I mean, Blade Runner. It's such a beautiful movie.
Blade Runner over Clerks?
Yeah, I'm going to go Blade Runner.
Okay, it's on the floor. Moving on, we have Blade Runner or we have Iron Man?
Oh, Iron Man. Iron Man, yeah, totally. I mean, hold on. I was dismissive of Blade Runner. I want to be clear. Like, that's a gorgeous movie, but Iron Man is so fun.
Iron Man is not on the floor, is what all you need to know. There's a new card in my hand, and it is Iron Man or Denis Villeneuve Arrival with Jeremy Renner.
I'm going to go Iron Man just because Arrival makes me really sad.
Yes, it does. And our final one. We have Iron Man, or we have Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
Oh, shit.
Iron Man, or Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
I mean, Iron Man's a perfect movie. But we did say Everything, Everywhere, All at Once was a perfect movie as well, didn't we?
It's not about me, or... reconciling your
you know
decisions.
What? You know what? I am going to give it to Everything Everywhere All at Once only because Iron Man set the formula for the Marvel movies and then that became the recipe, whereas Everything Everywhere All at Once was completely unlike anything I had seen up until that point. It is a completely unique movie into itself.
Well, Iron Man's on the floor. Here is your card. You officially have ended up with Everything Everywhere All at Once. And I will say that Everything Everywhere All at Once is more to me, instead of it being wholly original. I think it raided the fridge of every sorts of flavors that have been sitting around in kung fu movies and this movie. And then they put it into a new dish. But
I would agree. Okay, that might be a better allegory, sure.
But yes. Well, that's how you play this or... That. And that's how you end up with
all
that,
right,
my friend.
So next time we meet, we're going to, I got a list for you that you are not going to like.
25 movies. 25 movies and rapid fire. That's all we got to do.
All right.
So on that note, do you got anything else you want to talk about, man?
Just thank you guys. Happy New Year. Thanks for sticking with us. We got big things coming down the way. Obviously, we have the anniversary show coming up.
Yeah.
Look for us. We're going to start. Hopefully incorporating some video here soon. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
We're, you know, trying to make financial decisions to make that happen.
Very true. So if you want to contribute, shoot, write us in with your Venmo and Cash App.
Send a blank check to
whatchabeenwatchingpodcast@gmail.com. But no, shout out to all the listeners. Shout out to the Legion. We genuinely appreciate everybody. It's going to be a fun new year. I hope, like I said, from us and ours to you and yours, nothing but the best.
That's right.
So
go watch a movie
and talk about it with someone that you love.